Georgia inmate Troy Davis was scheduled to be executed on Tuesday, but hours before he was supposed to die by lethal injection, the U.S. Supreme Court granted him a last-minute stay of execution. He was convicted of killing an off-duty police officer in Savannah, Georgia. He's been on death row for 17 years. The case was based solely on eyewitness testimony. 7 of the 9 eyewitnesses have since recanted their testimony, and human rights activists are calling for a new trial. In a few minutes, we'll talk to one of those activists. But joining us now from Atlanta is NPR's Kathy Lohr. She's been covering the case. Kathy, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great. This is a really, really fascinating case. It's not often that the U.S. Supreme Court gets involved in cases like this. What makes this different?
It is interesting. It dates back to 1989 when an off-duty Savannah police officer, whose name is Mark McPhail, was killed. The shooting took place in a parking lot of a fast food restaurant near a bus station where the officer was working as a security guard. And it was even a high-profile case at the time, as you can imagine, because it was involving the murder of a police officer. Now, Troy Davis has always claimed that he was innocent, but at trial, there were 9 witnesses who testified that Davis was the shooter. So the murder weapon in this case was never found. There was no evidence other than eyewitness testimony, as you've said. And there is some evidence that police coerced at least some of the witnesses to identify Davis as the shooter at the time. But since the trial, 7 of those witnesses recanted or changed their testimony, and other witnesses have come forward to identify another suspect. So now the Supreme Court has issued a stay, at least a temporary stay, taking a look at this case.
What do we know about the cases where the witnesses did not change or recant their testimony?
What do we know about the cases where they did not change their testimony?
What makes them different from the others who did change their testimony?
Well, one of the witnesses who did not change his testimony is someone who is identified as a suspect in the case, and actually people have come forward now and pointed to this man. The other person who did not recant was apparently in a car, from what I'm understanding, and really didn't have that great of a view of the scene. The other 7 have come forward to change their stories.
So what happens now?
The U.S. Supreme Court, that is, granted a temporary stay on Tuesday, and the court is scheduled to discuss this case next week on Monday. But this is the court's first meeting since the term ended, so there is a backlog of cases, and at this point we're not sure when the court would decide or when the court might announce its decision. The Supreme Court gets about 8,000 petitions a year, and many of those are death penalty cases. It hears only 100 of them. So in that sense, it might be a long shot. But as we said, this is an interesting case. It's received a lot of attention nationwide. What we don't know is whether the 7 witnesses recanting is enough, whether that rises to the standard where the Supreme Court would take this case.
And you've reached out to the Georgia Attorney General's office. So what has their response been?
Well, actually, it goes back to it's right now is the Georgia Board of Pardons and Paroles was the sort of the last avenue here in Georgia. And they denied clemency under sort of lots of pressure. Thousands of letters were written on behalf of Troy Davis beginning last summer and going on until just this week, including folks like Pope Benedict and the South Africa Archbishop Desmond Tutu, former President Jimmy Carter, civil rights activists. But even advocates for the death penalty, including former FBI Director William Sessions and former federal prosecutor Bob Barr, who also happens to be the Libertarian candidate for president, they've also said that the case needs to be reexamined, that there are still too many unanswered questions. However, the Georgia board did not apparently decide that way. They did issue a statement, which is unusual in and of itself, saying that basically they considered this case for a very long time. They heard from witnesses, they questioned the witnesses, and that basically clemency was not warranted. So that's how it ended up before the U.S. Supreme Court, if in fact the court decides to take that case.
Well, Kathy, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
That was Kathy Lohr. She's an NPR correspondent in Atlanta and joined us from her studio there. Amnesty International has taken on Troy Davis's case, and joining us now we've got Jared Foyer. He's the Southern Regional Director for Amnesty International. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
So how did this case come to your attention?
Well, Amnesty International is an abolitionist organization, so we do oppose the death penalty. In all cases, we consider it the ultimate human rights violation, and so we oppose it out of moral reasons. That said, Troy Davis as one of the many cases that we've chosen to hold up really comes from the fact that we believe his case points to all that is wrong with the death penalty. You have issues of racial bias. You have issues of witness mishandling. You have procedural obstacles that ultimately end up being more important than basic questions of guilt and innocence. And then at the end of the day, you have a system that's really not going back and addressing its mistakes, putting way too much weight on that initial trial when there was inadequate legal counsel.
So why do you think the witnesses are changing their stories?
Well, these were witnesses who at the time were, in some cases, they were 16 years old. One of them was on parole. They were in very vulnerable positions. And you had a climate in Savannah that was very charged. You had a police officer that was shot. You had tremendous pressure on the district attorney to get a conviction. And so you thus had tremendous pressure on the witnesses. And the witnesses in their recantations stated the pressure that they were put under. They were intimidated. They were told they better do this. During the Georgia Parole Board hearing, one witness spoke about how a gun was put on the table in front of them. And so what was created was a climate of fear where they were afraid to basically tell what they believed to be the truth. And over the years, they have come forward at risk to themselves. They're not doing this for any reason, including being subpoenaed. But they're doing it because they believe that the truth does need to come out. The problem is that the courts have been unwilling to go back and look at these foundational questions of guilt and innocence and consider the recanted testimony. And when the appeals courts have heard the case, what they have not looked at is the value of the evidence on those questions of innocence. They've looked at whether the evidence can compel a new trial on procedural grounds.
So, again, not based on evidence, but based on procedure. What do you think that bodes for this case, for Troy Davis?
Well, on procedure, it's interesting because the Georgia Supreme Court was the most recent court that looked at this case, and they looked at it in March. And it's that decision that's actually been appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court. And when they looked at it, they were looking under grounds of cases where there had been one recantation, not seven recantations. And so the threshold is entirely different in this case. In addition, the Georgia decision, if you read it, they were looking at all sorts of reasons to discount the testimony, such as it wasn't properly notarized, or the defense did not properly show Troy Davis's dominant hand. And so I believe that there is substantial evidence to go to the Supreme Court and for the Supreme Court to be looking at this under an Eighth Amendment claim to basically say, and this is the issue at hand, and it's interesting, is whether or not it is an Eighth Amendment violation, whether or not it is unconstitutional to execute someone who is potentially innocent.
How has Troy been dealing with this? Because this is his second stay of execution. He got another stay last July. Do you have any idea how he as a man is dealing with this?
Right. This is not only his second stay, but this is his second stay within 24 hours. This time, the stay came at 5:30 p.m. when the execution was set for 7 o'clock. And they were even leading the witnesses to the witnesses for his execution into the room where they were going to oversee the execution. But you know, Troy and his family are some of the most solid people that I've ever met. They come from places of deep faith, and they're really able to sort of hold tight while everyone else around them, including myself and my colleagues at Amnesty, have been getting a little bit emotional. But even for us, at the end of the day, this case is about Troy. It's also about the foundational issues of the death penalty, and whether or not we're going to continue to proceed with a system that has all the problems that we see in Troy Davis's case.
Just quickly, where do you plan to go with this case, very briefly?
Well, it's at the U.S. Supreme Court's hands. They will decide either this Monday or probably the subsequent Monday whether or not they're going to hear the case. If they hear it, it will be in October, and you'll have a spring decision. Underlying all of this is the fact that the Georgia Board can grant a clemency at any time. And so our hope is that regardless of what the Supreme Court does, the Georgia Board, which is the fail-safe in Georgia, will look at it and say, you know what, we don't feel comfortable with an execution going forward with all these questions.
Well, Jared, thanks so much.
Thank you for covering this story.
We're speaking with Jared Foyer, the Southern Regional Director of Amnesty International, and he joined us from the studios of Georgia Public Broadcasting.